Hey folks, Richard Tubb here with another interview, and I'm excited today. I'm in Paris for DatoCon 19, and I'm joined by Tim Weller. I was going to say the new CEO of Datto, but it's been a year now, hasn't it?
It's been a year since Austin stepped up to the board and handed the reins over. And the board made it official on Jan 1, but it's been a fast year.
Yeah. So Austin grew the business from zero, basically Austin McCord, up to 14,000 MSPs. Mm. Incredible. How do you step in to those big shoes? And I know you've already grown the business a great deal again, but tell me what the first year has been like for you as CEO.
It's been a blur. The channel's moving fast, and so is Datto. I had a terrific opportunity to see Kevin Johnson, the new Starbucks CEO, and he succeeded Howard Schultz, founder of, and I think run the business for 40 years or something like that. And he had a great line about, along the lines of wisdom to understand what's best about the company and what your predecessor did, and courage to change things that need to change as you're growing. And by the way, Starbucks opening a Starbucks every 30 minutes around the world. So wow. I just still can't process that metric. Austin and I have had a great relationship, and he gave me advice on his last day to basically say, don't try to be me. This is a great business. Follow the channel, and it'll take care of itself. And so I think people ask me about Austin versus Tim a lot, and what I've said to people is we think about the business very, very similarly, and what's different now is just scale. And he even noticed that in his last couple of years. We're 1,700 employees, 16,000 partners. And the hallmark of Datto was those close personal partner relationships. You could, in the early days, often just get Austin on the phone. You're calling tech support, and it might go right through to him. And we'll do anything for a partner. And so we still want to, and we'll make those promises. Now, how do we deliver on those at scale? So then it becomes down to business process, software systems, training. The culture is still the same, but can you execute at larger scale? And this is this next phase of the journey, say next 3 to 5 years, is where some companies start to feel like a big company. Yeah. And you'll get the cultural pulse here at Paris. I would love your feedback at the end to see, does this still feel like a DattoCon? Does this still have that fun part? We know we've got the great tech. Does it still have the feel of the place you want to go?
Yeah, well, absolutely it does, but I'll give you more feedback on later. But I'm fascinated with your background. I think it's, the path that's led you to being CEO. So you've got a programming and engineering background. I've heard you talk about you grew up like me. I started off with an Atari 600 XL learning how to program in BASIC, and you've talked about BASIC and Fortran. Yeah. Tell us a bit more about your background. What brought you to here?
Yeah, my first serious machine was an Atari 800.
There you go, the big brother to the 600 XL.
I actually started on a Commodore PET, if you remember back with the chiclet keyboard. But that was just down at the library. Nobody owned computers, and I shelled out every bit of money I had from all my odd summer jobs when I was a kid, and really emptied the bank account and made a bet on an Atari 800, which was brilliant because I became a video game designer, and so it ended up almost immediately leading me to lucrative work as a software developer, and I was still not quite in university. Had some full-time job offers in the video game industry, but decided to go to school. And stayed in university for a decade. So I pursued a PhD and assumed I would be a professor. I just loved computer science and math. And then something strange happened, which was I had this thought that you only get, one chance to sort of set yourself down a career path. And for reasons I won't dive into, I went to Wall Street. I had never honestly visited New York even. Just thought it was exciting. And I covered technology, telecom in particular, and the future of the internet. This is early 90s, so it was just all exploding around us, and so much fun. And I got to meet CEOs of companies all around the world who were trying to think about their broadband strategy, their wireless strategy. It's hard to think about now. We used to use copper wire and pay telephones, the red phone booth in your native land. And so, that was it. I had a nice ride in the 90s in a bull market there and learned so much about where the world was going. And then one of the companies I was interacting with was very small but fascinating, called Akamai Technologies.
Yeah.
And really not much revenue at all when I was talking to them, maybe $1 million. And they asked if I'd be their chief financial officer and help take them public. So that was 20 years ago, and it's been five operating companies since then. So Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm a programmer, a Wall Street banker, or but my core is engineering. You know, and my wife will definitely tell you this guy's an engineer, and yeah. I've always been around tech companies now. So Datto is just perfect in that regard.
I love it. Now, something you referred to earlier about like the pulse of what's happening with the MSP community. Something that I've noticed is there has been a significant upswing in acquisitions, MSP yes. acquisitions. So I spoke to, on an earlier episode of the podcast, I spoke to Mitesh Patel, who's the CEO of Fifosys. Yes. We did a whole episode about MSP acquisitions. How do you see the market, and why suddenly now are MSPs acquiring other MSPs?
Yeah, there's so many reasons. I mean, it's common. I've been in a lot of industries within tech, and it's common at this phase of an industry. If we have 16,000 partners, surely, you know, the upper quartile are executing better at some level and getting some scale and are just more mature businesses. And so they start looking at the rest and saying, can we gain scale? So that's evolution of restaurants or hotels or really any industry. So it's another signal, yet another signal that the channel's growing up. There are real synergies in all tech businesses when you do M&A if you've got your tech stack in order. So, you know, Mitesh is a good example. I mean, he's running a very tight operational business, and then buying younger MSPs who are less mature, you get margin expansion. And so it becomes this opportunity to get not only scale on the revenue side, but really quite a bit of operating leverage from profits. You know, Datto sees it because we'll have two partners that merge, and if they're both Datto partners, that's great. If one or the other is a Datto partner, then we view it as a fresh chance to go into the one that's not and talk about the suite. Of course, in general, we'd rather the acquirer, you know, be on Datto, because then they've standardized on us and they bring it in. So we've generally been a beneficiary of that. When we think about our partners, give you a sense of scale. We did in Barcelona at DattoCon last year, we did an M&A breakout. And my recollection is we had between 8 and 10 MSPs. And one of our partners, Tim Walker from the UK, led a panel that I was on this year. We had a breakout in M&A, and I think we probably had 40 to 50 in the wow. room. So, I mean, just to give you a sense of the interest, and not different in the US DattoCons either, just very much an acceleration there. I think more MSPs are looking than buying right now. A lot of very basic questions about what am I looking for? How big can I buy? How do I do integration after I merge? So I still think if there were 40 or 50 people in the room, you know, maybe 5 or 6 of them are actually acquiring. But definitely a trend we're seeing.
So we talked about maturity levels of MSPs. The listeners to this podcast, there's a lot of mature MSPs that listen to that, and I don't just mean in terms of age of the owners, but there's a lot of aspiring MSPs listen to this. Yeah. And one of the stats that you shared during your keynote was that 80% of DattoCon attendees use a PSA tool, professional mm-hmm. services automation tool. Mm-hmm. For those MSPs who are like on the fence about, well, why do I need a PSA? What's it yeah. going to bring? How would you describe the benefits of a professional services automation tool to them?
Yeah, you know, this is a tool. Every industry that tracks people, legal, accounting, there's a PSA tool for domain specific, you know, uses, and this is domain specific PSA tools for MSPs. You know, every company in every industry eventually puts in a large piece of software called ERP. Many people wait, you know, till they're 50 million of turnover, or, you know, to do that. But Excel spreadsheets only go so far, much as I love Excel. And in this business, if you're going to make the move to managed services, if you're going to start charging recurring revenue and you know, using your techs for service desk and maintenance, and you need to be able to track their time and which projects they're working on, even in the project work basis or consulting business. And it's just too hard to do that effectively. So I think if you don't want to grow rapidly, you can sort of, you know, work your own scripts and your own tools and cobble things together. But if you have aspirations for growth, it's the single best investment you can make from a platform perspective. They're not expensive in dollar terms. You know, they're not prohibitive. It's the commitment to them and doing the integration and the setup right that really is where people find they live or die. And yeah. You know, you can burn hundreds of hours of time. And we generally encourage people to what I would call accept the defaults. You know, these tools are very well thought through and used by tens of thousands of MSPs. And mostly the options on the menus, the default are pretty close. And then as time goes on, you start to adapt them to your business, but in many cases, if you're small, adapt your business to the tool. This is really, I'm old enough to remember when, before Salesforce, it was Siebel and you bought CRM in a box. The hallmark of Salesforce was this new category, really, and young businesses bought Salesforce and they just adopted it. And it was the seven stages of selling in the sales pipeline. And so the tool was good, but the business process that went with it. Here's how you sell. And I think this is, here's how you MSP for the smaller ones. For the big MSPs, of course, they've got their playbook already done and they have to adapt the tool to their playbook, and yeah, which is why we make it highly configurable. But for young ones, I would do everything I could, whether it's ours or a competitor, to try to just get on the standard platform. Very, very viable tool. And if you want to sell, to tie to your previous question, you know, if I'm acquiring and I'm an MSP, I can diligence the business. The two or three things I'd be looking for, one is recurring revenue, of course. That's the only meaningful number I can pay a big revenue multiple or valuation multiple on. So the more recurring revenue, the much more valuable your business is worth. If you've got a PSA tool, I can come in and understand the business very, very quickly. Doesn't matter to me if I'm on the same tool. It'd be great if it was easy integration, but at least the data is in a structured format and I can look at a year or two of history, and then of course, culture fit goes without saying. But there's so many benefits to it on the exit as well as running the business.
Yeah, great answer. And some of the feedback I hear from smaller MSPs is, well, we'll put a PSA tool when we get big enough.
Yeah.
And the answer, what I go back to them is, you will be big enough if you put a PSA tool in place now, because it enables you to grow.
And
to
it's measure. So much easier to put it in now. So I like to joke with my team, we're in the middle of a difficult ERP deployment ourselves for Datto. Now, of course, we don't use PSA, we use an ERP because we're a large business. But I joke with them, I say, in the very early days of Akamai, where I was chief financial officer, we put in Oracle Financials, but we were a tiny business. And so we're able to just take it out of the box and put it in and choose default on everything. The same advice I just gave, it was the easiest ERP deployment I've ever done. And then we just evolved as the business grew, we modified the Oracle Financials. They grew with us.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to put it in when you're young, I think, is really it's the foundation of a house. It's the same thing. You can build it later, but why would you?
Yeah, I implemented PSA tool when there was less than five of us within my MSP business.
Yeah, back in the day. And so, again, you don't have to break the bank on the cost side there. You know, you don't have to do so much work initially.
Yeah, yeah. Let's dig into some of the news from DattoCon, starting with what's happening in Europe, an exciting time for you. Now, your heritage, your family heritage is Finnish.
Yeah, right. So my mother's whole side is Finnish, and so we've always identified, we were close to her family, and we were just always identified there. I would be talking second cousins if I went and found them. She's given me a list, and I'll be ringing the bell for a stranger, but there's always been that Finnish spirit, yeah.
Yeah, and you're opening new offices in Copenhagen.
We are.
As part of the Nordic expansion. Tell me more about that. What do the plans for Europe look like?
Yeah, so you know, we've got the DACH region well in hand, covered out of Munich, and we, of course, travel to all the DACH countries. We've had a long time office in Amsterdam, and the Benelux are there. And we've got a terrific leader who's done a number of large enterprise tech software plays in Europe. Very experienced, terrific leader in Benelux. And so we just started doing the market research. We have a lot of partners in the Nordics, and we started looking over, going, you know, it would be not too difficult to cover that a little bit closer from Copenhagen, easy train to Stockholm, you need a short flight to Helsinki and so forth. We have partners in all four of the major Nordics. And as we did the market research, and the levels of maturity in tech in those are very advanced economies, of course, it appears those markets may at least be the size of Benelux and maybe even a little bit bigger, and they're growing very rapidly. So so we made the commitment, and that puts sales and support and account management, just puts some of the partner-facing stuff in Copenhagen, where we've always had engineers. And so it's fun. And I think the rest of Europe is, we cover, of course, everything from somewhere. So, we may cover, we've got one or two people working from home in various countries. We've got some distributors in Italy, for example, good distributor. But you'd see us open offices in a country whenever we think there's some critical mass about to happen. And of course, we're sitting here in lovely Paris, so you might be able to guess, what the next market could be. So
absolutely. Let's talk about the tech for a minute. This is one of my favorite subjects, the cloud continuity. During your keynote, you said something I thought was really interesting that I've been sort of banging on about for years. And Clay Continuity, you said, it's not just for disasters. You know, so most people think of continuity being, oh yeah, there's an earthquake. And here in the UK, especially, I say in Europe, it's like, well, we don't experience those same sort of disasters. But, and specifically, I want to talk about the PC, the resilient imaging it talks about. I'm excited about that. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, so you know, when you do continuity, and so by the way, I agree with your premise there. I mean, I've been in tech long enough to know, you know, disaster was me tripping over the power cord, you know, me dropping a magnet near the disk. I mean, it's the server crashing. It's not the fire. Those are, of course, make big headlines. But, you know, maintenance, just normal on and off of servers. So we do that really well. The resilient imaging, if you're on a server, a Windows server, you get a technology called Windows Snapshots. You can tell Microsoft, pause the server, essentially, in lay terms, and give me an image of everything running, all the applications, and then I'll take that image offline, and then I can virtualize that, right? And that's pretty standard. It takes a fair amount of work to implement that, and that's what Datto's done. On a laptop or PC, there really isn't such a thing. You're in a different OS, and of course, the laptops and PCs are on and off. You might unplug it at the end of the night. You might be traveling on mobile. You might be offline. And so resilient imaging was a two-year effort to build the tech to essentially rebuild images in our cloud only. So there's no appliance. And every time your laptop is on, you might be at a conference. We're going to grab whatever data has been changed and pull it back, but it's never a full image of your machine that gets pulled back. And so we essentially, it's puzzle pieces, and our engineers have figured out some algorithms to rebuild those puzzle pieces to say, okay, here's the last known likely good image of Richard's laptop. And you leave your laptop in an Uber here in Paris on the way to the airport, you get back home, you go over to a colleague's web browser and you can run your laptop. You go down to the high street, you buy another laptop, pull, you know, whatever you're running in our cloud back onto an image on your laptop. And so, you know, people will say, well, I'm not sure I need to virtualize a laptop. And the response would be, well, what I just described there, you know, even that 1 hour, if it's a board meeting, might actually be quite worth it. But the ease of virtualizing and then pulling the image back onto the laptop for the MSP, which is our lens, means you don't spend an hour or two restoring that and rebuilding all the toolbars and all the config, and it's not file and folder. It just comes back to you. And then, of course, you get screenshot verification, which Datto invented. And so you sleep at night if you get 1,500 endpoints, and you can look down and go, okay, these 10 did not have a clean backup. Why is that? Oh, yeah, that client's at a conference. They must have been offline for a day. Let's you know, you can monitor and manage this universe, right? It's easy to back up, I'm fond of saying. It's easy to back up, it's hard to restore, and you only get paid. It's like the insurance industry. It's easy to take the insurance premiums up front, and you only get paid if you actually deliver for me in a disaster.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'm totally sold on the concept, and it's one of those ones. It was like, it's so simple, I can't believe somebody's not done it sooner.
It's a fun one, and it, you know, it's Datto. We weren't quite sure if people would find it commercial, but it's almost 10% of our U.S. partners are using it. It's only launched commercially a few months ago, so we're super excited to bring it to Europe. We just want to make sure we had all the data centers, and obviously data sovereignty, everything is European and in the way you'd want to be, and GDPR compliant, etc. So
absolutely,
it's going to be great.
Yeah, and SaaS protection. I want to touch very briefly on Microsoft Teams. Is an absolute monster, growing at a huge rate.
Yep.
So you brought in Teams backup as well, which is very welcome. And I saw some people cheering.
We did.
When you did that. Tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind that.
Yeah. So you know, if you go back as far as you and I do in tech. You know, you think about Netscape versus Internet and the browser wars, and Microsoft says, oh, you know, look at Internet Explorer, it's just been amazing. Well, you know, they've hidden Netscape so far down in the toolbars you couldn't even find it, right? And they eventually, of course, had a big government case on that. There's a little bit of that going on here. That, you know, Teams is a great product, but there's a little bit of, if I already have 0365 and I paid for it, I can just toggle a switch and I get Teams, right? So versus you think about like Datto as a business, as a company, we run on Google Suite and we run on Slack. And so those two are very, very aligned, and now Teams is a bit there. And so Microsoft will report these huge seat counts, and it will remain to be determined what the usage is. That said, it's been a great product, and it's clear the usage is rolling. And if you use it even for 10 minutes, you want to be able to back up all of that data. And I think doubly so for Teams, because as people come and go from end user companies, you want to go, where was that thread for marketing? Well, those two people left. Well, they actually posted the documents in there too, and you want to be able to index and search. this has really been the hallmark. So we're sitting here already doing SaaS protection, and I have been blown away by the millions of times, millions of objects that people need to restore. And, you know, and we think about it as, again, you know, disasters, forget about that. Microsoft's not going to ultimately, you know, lose your data center. But it's more the real time, where's my data? And it's rogue employees, it's fat fingering on the keyboard, I've wiped out all the accounting spreadsheets, and you don't notice it, and they just disappear in the cloud. You know, it's not like the PC, where you used to sort of be able to see it, or you could back it up and put it in a drawer. It's a very ambiguous concept, and so we find partners and users all the time losing their data. So on the back of SaaS, SharePoint, Teams, it's just, we think there's a whole path of value-added services that the MSPs are going to profit from that in total will add up to multiples of the margin they're getting on the actual O365 seat, right? Whether it's VDI and all, you know, this whole sort of new cloud world, there's going to be these new revenue streams that open up. But you have to focus on the margin, of course,
yeah,
if you're the MSP. So that's the Datto lens, and we've been hearing Teams, and we now think it's a real margin opportunity at scale. So 200 million O365 seats, which is just staggering. So if you're an MSP and don't know what to do today, go sell some SaaS protection to anybody. This is a product you can ring the bell on a new client, and they can say, well, I've got this wonderful MSP over here, and you say, well, I'd like to talk about O365, and I'm going to put some Teams on there. I'm going to do maybe some Vade email security with our partner Vade, and a little bit of a bundle. You might even be able to just get your nose under the tent, so to speak, in using that kind of a tool.
Absolutely makes sense.
And it's going to be very exciting because there's the prevalence of O365 in Europe.
So we're coming towards the end of our time. Just before we go, I always do this with new CEOs. Okay. I reached out to people and I said, who is Tim Weller? What do we think of him? And the feedback I got was that you're a great leader, but also a devoted father as well. Tell me, what does it mean to be a good CEO and a good dad?
Yeah, gosh. You've caught me off guard with that, because usually, you know, I'm on the road almost every week in long hours, so I feel like a bit rubbish on the dad front sometimes.
It's not the feedback I get.
Yeah, I've had a few things. I mean, we definitely try to FaceTime, and, you know, as you'd expect, I try to focus a little bit during the weeks on helping kids with homework, if I can block even a half an hour or, you know, an hour if I'm a bit lucky. Tough in Paris, but there was a math test this week, I will tell you, and I stayed up till the wee hours to be involved. You know, I've gone back and forth. I've actually had some years off between jobs. These are hard jobs. Executive jobs are 24/7, really. And so in between them, when I've been able to, I've taken a year or two. And so I've spread some retirement out between my five operating tours. And then the kids have me full time. And so then they want me back, you know, out of the house, or at least my wife does. So I think, you know, but what sways me a little bit in that is I didn't really want to model an image of me sitting around the house, you know, so they have to see, at least for the trade-off, that they can't be with me and I can't be with them during the weeks often, is that they see hard work being modeled. You know, if you want to rise in your career, if you want to do interesting things, work with interesting people, make a paycheck, you know, it's not professional YouTube watcher, which is, you know, of course, what my teenagers and everybody else's teenagers, how do I get paid doing this? And these YouTube stars are really making it difficult to parent, because they're just sure they're going to be rich, you know, by just sort of goofing off on videos. And so, yeah, it's good. No, it helps them. We focus, like you might imagine, on STEM and trying to keep, you know, let's just keep our math and science, you know, strong guys. And I'd love it if they became programmers too, of course.
Well, as a stepfather, I've got a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. Good advice. I might tap you up for more advice on that as we go forward.
So. Yeah, and I've actually brought them the summer for 3 weeks, a bit on my European work tour. We're so big over here, I keep coming and I want to invest more. So we did, you know, London, and, you know, we did some of the offices, and then they just toured the cities while I was on the workday, and managed to stop by Finland too, which is very, very strange, because it's light all but 4 hours. So
yeah.
The kids were up on very weird cycles. But it's and I highly recommend that tour. It was we had a ball.
Fantastic, Tim. Thanks for your time today, and congrats on a really successful first year.
Thank you.
Here's looking forward to maybe this conversation again in Berlin at DattoCon 2020, and we'll see where we are then.
It's a date, and we're glad to have you here too. I'm glad you're enjoying the show.
Cheers. Thank you, mate.
All right. Take care.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tubblog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback. Hey team, this is Richard again. Just one more thing before you take off, and that is MSP Insights. Now, every Tuesday, I share my thoughts on the business of IT with you, the managed service community. Thousands of managed service providers already subscribe to MSP Insights. It's easy to sign up, easy to cancel. MSP Insights is basically a short email from me every Tuesday without fail with advice on growing your IT business, plus cool resources I found, discovered, or started exploring that week. It's kind of like my diary of cool things, and often includes articles or books I've read, tools I've discovered, and events I think you'd be interested in, often sent to me by my friends and Tub Talk podcast guests. So if that sounds fun, a short tiny bite of MSP goodness every Tuesday, and you'd like to try it out, just go to go.tub.co/Tuesday. That's go.tub.co/Tuesday. Drop in your email and you'll get the very next one. Thanks for listening.